Hey, welcome everyone. So good to be back together. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. And if this is the second, this is our second session in a three-part series on intellectual and emotional honesty in our relationship with God, Torah, and Halakha. I'm Rabbi Avi Strasberg, and it is really good to be back with you. So before we can dive into our learning for today, I do want to just, you know, get it fresh in our mind. We're going to be spending some time referring back to the piece of Talmud that we saw about the prophets from last week. So I want to get that back in our head. So just to remind you, we were looking at when there is feeling like, if you are in a moment of feeling like there is some sort of dissonance or distance between the words of prayer, that they don't feel emotionally honest, that there were these two different strategies that the Talmud offered us. One is perhaps as Jeremiah and Daniel did, actually, if something really feels untrue, it really feels like a lie. God is a God of truth, and maybe there should be moments where there are things that we refrain from saying. And the members of the Great Assembly offering us a strategy to the extent that something feels not true is perhaps that we just don't have full knowledge. We don't have full comprehension, or that we need to reinterpret it or find a new way into that language. I want to continue thinking about emotional honesty in prayer today, and perhaps offer a couple of more strategies of how we might deal with this. So we'll go ahead, and Esther, I think, has already shared, and we'll share again. We'll share the source sheet, and we'll go ahead and we will get started. So the first text that we're going to be looking at comes from Rabbi Nachman. So Rabbi Nachman, he is late 1800s, early 1900s. Rabbi Nachman, you know, really in his brief life of 38 years, he died young of tuberculosis. He produced a tremendous amount of Torah that had a huge impact on the world. And he also really wrestled with a lot of darkness in his own emotional life, in his personal life. There was a lot of tragedy in his life. And yet he writes a lot about what it means to have faith and what it means to have faith in God and find God in darkness. So Rabbi Nachman is always one of the people that I turn to if there's a question about sort of like wrestling with your faith or wrestling with God or your relationship with God. That's something that comes up a lot in Rabbi Nachman's writing. So Rabbi Nachman, the first approach that I'm going to kind of offer, to the extent that when you are praying, you feel like, I'm not sure if I mean the words that I'm saying, what do I do right now? The first approach that I'm going to offer, I'm going to kind of call it like, if it doesn't feel true now, just say it and you'll make it true. Make it true for yourself, okay? So Rabbi Nachman, this comes from Likutei Etzot, collection of advice or wisdoms. He has a section called Truth and Faith. And he says, Ha'emunah Tola b'feshal adam. Faith depends on the mouth of a person. Shetzichim l'deber amunah b'fe. Because a person needs to speak faith through the mouth. Kemo shekatuv, as it's written in Psalms, Odia emunatcha b'fi. I will make known your faithfulness through my mouth. So there we're really talking about like, we are making known God's faithfulness through our mouth. But we're interpreting that verse to mean, I am going to say words of faith through my mouth, that there's a connection between faith and articulating faith through one's mouth. Ve'alken, k'she'adam nofel me'emunah chas v'shalom, for this reason, when a person falls from faith, God forbid, if they're suffering from some kind of doubt, you know, certainly if they're praying and it feels like the things they're praying don't feel true or reflective in the world, etzah lezeh, the advice for this person, sheyedaber ha'emunah b'fi, that they should speak words of faith through their mouth. Sheyomar b'fe male shehu ma'amin b'chuli, that they should say with a full mouth that they believe. Kizeh b'atzmo shemedaber b'fiv dibore emunah, this in of itself, that a person speak words of faith through their mouth. Zeh b'atzmo hu b'chinat emunah, this in and of itself is an aspect of faith. Because just speaking these words of faith will come to bring a person to a full-hearted faith, to a complete faith. Because faith depends on the mouth of the person. So there's a question here of, what if I am davening? What if I'm praying? And I feel like, I don't know if I can say these words with intellectual or emotional honesty. I feel like there's a dissonance between what I am reading or what the words of the Siddur say and what I'm saying. And Rabbi Nachman's advice here is actually faith is dependent upon the mouth and the things we speak, the power of our words. Words have the power of creating reality. So to the extent that when you are saying something, you feel like it's not true, his advice is you have to speak the words, that speaking the words can shape our reality and speaking our words can shape our faith. So here the advice is, if it feels dishonest to be saying something, that if you speak it and keep putting that, that will eventually shape your faith such that it will then become true for you and it will no longer feel like a lie. And then Rabbi Nachman, he goes on to say the opposite. He says, just as words are powerful and words have the power to create and shape reality and certainly to create and shape our faith, such that if there is a disconnect or we're not believing something by speaking it, we come to believe it. And therefore, then there won't be that dissonance or disconnect between what we're saying. He says the opposite is also true, that words are powerful in the opposite direction, that if we say things that imply a lack of faith, that this can also come to shape our reality such that that will negatively impact our faith or negatively impact. So careful we need to be with the words we put out into the world with the power of speech. So that's Rabbi Nachman. I want to take a look together. Rabbi Nathan Zvi Finkel is a 20th century Musar thinker. So Musar sort of in the world of Jewish ethics, working on ourselves, working on our attributes to become sort of the fullest, best versions of ourselves. So he has a collection of writings called Or HaTzafun, The Hidden Light, that is on the Torah. Like there is a book on Bereishit, Shmo, Vayikra, Bamidbar, and Devarim. It's not organized by Parsha. So you like can't go to Or HaTzafun and see like, what does he say on Parshat Bo? It's not like that, but you could go to Sefer Shmo, to the book of Shmo, and see what does he say about Sefer Shmo. Anyway, so he says, he teaches in one of his essays, he teaches, Umishum kach, for this reason, Tiknu Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, Et HaTfilot B'Lashon, For this reason, the members of the Great Assembly established the prayers in the present tense. So we're back at, just like the Talmud and Yoma was talking about the relationship between the members of the Great Assembly and establishing prayer using the language of Ha'el, Hagadol, Hagibor, those descriptors for God. Now Rabbi Nathan Sfinkel, he's also talking about language of prayer. And he's saying, this is why we establish prayer in the present tense, meaning what? That we say in our blessings, we say Goel Yisrael, that God is the redeemer of Israel in the present tense, that God is actively redeeming Israel. It doesn't say Ga'al Yisrael in the past tense. It doesn't say Yig'al Yisrael in the future tense, but God is Goel Yisrael. God is the redeemer of Israel. God is Mikabetz Nidchei Amo Yisrael. God is actively in the present tense, gathering those who are dispersed from God's people, Israel. God is Bonei Yisraelayim. God is actively in the present tense. God is building Jerusalem, Machazir Shekhinah Tol Tzion, God is returning God's divine presence to Zion, and things like this. Ve'lo ve'lashon atid, ki bechol zman, bechol ha-matzavim, bechol ha-nesibot, that actually it's not in the future tense, but rather because in every moment, in all situations, alinu lirot she'ashem po'el be'ota sha'a atzma be'gilat Yisrael, be'kibut nidchei Yisrael v'chedomeh. It's upon us to see that God is actively redeeming God's people, Israel, and bringing in those who are scattered and dispersed in all moments. Umisha eino makir bezeh, and anyone who doesn't recognize that, chaser lo beyisodot ha'emunah, they are lacking in the foundations of faith. This is not, so he's not Rabbi Nathan Zvi Finkel. I would say what Rabbi Nathan Zvi Finkel is saying, I think he's still a little bit addressing, it may feel as if when you are in the world, it may feel as if God is not actively doing some of these things that are written in the present tense language of prayer. But that's exactly why they're written in the present tense, because it's a statement of faith to say, even if in this moment I don't see that God is Bonei Yerushalayim, I don't see that God is rebuilding Jerusalem or whatever the thing is, I am stating sort of with full voice, I'm articulating it through my mouth, much like Rabbi Nachman says, that God is doing these things. And even if I'm not sure that I see that God is actively redeeming God's people at any given moment, it would be so easy, in a sense, to say that God was Ga'al Yisrael, that God redeems us in the past. Or perhaps it would be easy to say in the future tense, I don't see it happening now, but I believe that one day God will do it. But what is much harder, what is the real challenge of faith, is to say, actually, I see God, or I assert that I believe that God is doing it in this moment, even if it doesn't feel true, even if I'm not sure. And so just putting Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Nathan Zvi Finkel together, I would say, in a sense, they're both wrestling with the, what if in my current situation, the language of prayer doesn't match up with the reality that I'm seeing in the world? And Rabbi Nachman is saying, to the extent that the reality that you're experiencing in the world doesn't match up with the language of prayer, he's saying, you just have to say the words of prayer, because by saying this, it will shape your faith until you do come to really being in that kind of relationship with God. And Rabbi Natan Zvi Finkel, sort of similarly in a different way, he's saying, yeah, to the extent that you don't actually see God, you may have moments where you don't see God acting in this world in this overt way. By saying it in the present tense, you are making it true for yourself. And this is one of the core tenets of what it means to have faith. I'd like to move now to a different text. We're going to be looking at a text by the Pachad Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner, 20th century Jewish thinker, American Jewish thinker. But before we get to that, we need to do a little bit of work to be able to understand what his text is going to be. And before I get into this, I just want to say sort of the rest of the sources that we're going to be looking at today are very much heavily inspired and taken from a session of a colleague of mine, Rabbi Akiva Madenson. Rabbi Akiva Madenson just recently, he's an amazing Torah scholar, and he just got smicha ordination from Hadar. He has this incredible class called something like Praying When We Don't Believe. So there's a text in the Talmud. The second strategy, I would say, if the first strategy is like, I'm struggling to believe, it doesn't feel true, it doesn't feel honest. It's something about just say the words. Just saying the words will bring you to a place of it being true, will bring you to a place of honesty. Totally recognizing, as Kalila said, that that might be challenging or problematic for some people. The second strategy that I want to offer you, just sort of like skip to the end of it, where we're going to get to, is to the extent that it feels untrue, find the kernel of truth. Find the thing, even if you can't sign on 100% to the whole package, find the thing that is true for you in there, and that will allow you to step into the language of the prayer. So we'll get there. So we're going to start with the Talmud. The Talmud quotes from Aleinu, the end of Aleinu, the Hayah Hashem Lamelch al Kol Haaretz, Bayom Hahu Yeh Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. And God will be, in the future tense, sovereign over all of the land. Bayom Hahu, on that future day, on that day, God will be one and God's name will be one. The point of this line in Aleinu is to say that God is not one now. That one day in the future, God, on Bayom Hahu, on that day, God will be one and God's name will be one. But that is to say that right now, God is not one and God's name is not one. So that's just quoting Aleinu. And then the Gemara, the Talmud from Psachim, comes along and says, Atu ha'ina lav echadhu? Is this line from the Aleinu coming to say that God is not one? There's kind of like an incredulity of the Talmud, that the Talmud is saying like, oh, now when I really think about this line from Aleinu that we say all the time, it seems like there's kind of something, you know, surprising that this central prayer, what we're actually saying is, God will be one, but God's not one now. You know, think about that in relationship to our famous prayer, the Shema. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. The Shema is saying that God is one now. God is supposed to be one now, right? That's our whole relationship to God. How could it be that the Aleinu is saying that God isn't one now, that God will be one? So the Gemara is raising that problem. Amar Rabbi Acha Bar Chanina, Rabbi Acha Bar Chanina says, Lo keolam hazeh haolam haba. This world is not like the world to come. Ha'olam hazeh, this world, al b'serot tovot omer baruch ha'tov ve'amitiv, v'al b'serot ra'ot omer baruch da'ina emet. This world, on good tidings, we say, blessed is the one who is good and who does good. And on bad tidings, over bad news, we say, blessed is the true judge. That in this world, when there's something good that happens, we say one thing about God. And when something bad happens, we say a different thing about God. Le'olam haba, in the world to come, we only say one thing about God, kulo hatov hametiv. We just say that God is good and does good. The Gemara seems to be bringing this kind of almost indirectly to answer the question, are we really saying, is Aleinu really saying that God isn't one now? And the answer seems to be no. In this world, we don't experience God as being one now. Because when good things happen, we have one relationship to God and we say, Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv, blessed is the one who is good and does good. And when bad things happen, we have a different relationship with God, which is to say that we have this like bifurcated, separated relationship to God, that when bad things happen, we say, oh, blessed is the true judge. But in the world to come, Bayom HaHu, on that future day, our relationship, God will be one. And as evident by that, whenever anything happens, It will all be, we will say, Hatov v'Hametiv. Blessed is the one who is good and does good. Okay. Let's dive into the Pachad Yitzchak now. Now we have the correct grounding. Okay, so the Pachad Yitzchak is going to know, whereas the Aleinu uses this language, acknowledges that in this world, either God is not one or we do not experience God as one, the distinction Larry was making, but God is not one in this world. And thus we sort of speak truth and say, in the future, God will be one. The Pachad Yitzchak notices that on Shabbat, we say in our liturgy, Ata Echad Veshimcha Echad, you are one and your name is one. In Aleinu, we say, God, we acknowledge the world as is and say, God, you are not one right now, but your name will be one. Whereas in Mincha on Shabbat, we say, you are one and your name is one. And the Pachad Yitzchak, Rav Huttner, is going to ask, how can we say such a thing? If Aleinu is true that God's name is not one now, how can we, in Mincha of Shabbat, be saying with any kind of full authenticity, saying, you are one and your name is one, when according to Aleinu, we know that to not be true? Okay, so let's take a look at that. So he says, "Bekesher im shevach ha'achdut yeshnam diborim asher hakol ram nimna mihem mipiot bilti heotam het'em le'erech hamatzav shebohem nishma'im." With respect to praising the oneness or the unity of God, there are things that sort of the mouth is unable to say with a full voice, because they are not really like matching or appropriate with the true reality of the situation in which they are being heard. Meaning to say in English, there are things that sometimes we are not able to say when we are praising, specifically when it comes to God's oneness. We're not able to say with a full voice because it just doesn't match the experience, the world in which they are being expressed. Indeed, the heart convulses over the theme of achdut, of unity, that is established by the sages in our prayer. We say in Mincha on Shabbat, Ata echad v'shimcha echad, you are one and your name is one. This is part of the liturgy of Shabbat. And didn't those who established this as the language of prayer, didn't they know that the prophets, meaning the prophets that we were just looking at in Yoma, Jeremiah and Daniel, didn't they know that the prophets that came before the members of the Great Assembly, they didn't say the words Gibor v'hanora. They cut them from their prayers. Because they knew that because God is a God of truth, they didn't want to say lies about God. We already saw in that Talmud piece that the prophets taught us and that if something is not true, if it is not reflective of reality, don't say it. It will be a lie, and God is a God of truth. So how could it be that we're established in the language of Mincha, the prayer language, that we're saying, Atah echad v'shimcha echad, you're one, your name is one? Because that's not, so says the Pachad Yitzchak. He seems to say, that's not true about God. So how could we be saying it? V'alken kol zman sh'haya b'da'atam ki hanhagat ha'ashgacha eina b'bechinat toarim halalu shel gibor v'hanora. And all the time, when the prophets had in mind that sort of the divine governance by which God governed the world wasn't fitting to these descriptors of Gibor and Ora, that God is mighty and awesome because the Gentiles were carousing in their sanctuary and so forth. Hayalahem bilti efsiri b'amiratorim halalu. It was impossible for these prophets to use these descriptors because it just wasn't true. Imken yipol lev adam. And if this is so that the prophets taught us when something isn't true, don't say it, because God is a God of truth and it will be a lie. It's not really reflective of the reality. The heart of a person should fall. How is it possible to establish in the language of prayer this praise of God's oneness? Halo mefarashininu ki hanhagat hashgacha lefi ha'toar shel ata echad ki hanhagat hayom hahu. Haven't we explicitly taught, meaning in the Aleinu, that this descriptor of God as one is only going to come on Hayom Ahu, on that day in the future? Aleinu says God isn't one now. When will God be one? In the future. And sort of describing God as one now, on this day, in the current space, that's not, it doesn't make sense to describe God as being one then. That's not the right descriptor.
והלא גם הנביאים שלפני אנשי כנסת הגדולה ידעו כי עתידים הם התוארים של גיבור והנורא להתקלות באחרית ימים. And didn't the prophets who came before the members of the Great Assembly, didn't they know that one day in the future it would be fitting to use the words gibor and nora to describe God as holy and mighty? Daniel and Jeremiah, even if they didn't feel like in their time, in their situation, they could with full heart use the language of mighty and awesome to describe God, they knew that one day, at the end of days, one day that would be true. מכל מקום, מכיוון שלפי המצב היה בדעתם של הנביאים, כי איה גבורותיו ואיה נוראותיו, in any event, even though they knew it one day be true, because in their current situation, they were experiencing this sense of where is God's might and where is God's awesomeness, הייתה אמירתם של תארים הללו נחשבת כמתנגד למידת האמת של הקדוש ברוך הוא. This, using these descriptors of gibor and nora, it was seen as being like opposite or in direct contradiction to the attribute of God as true. Even though they knew that one day these things, it would be, you know, they could have justified themselves into it. They could have said, okay, we don't experience God as great or mighty now, but one day we will, so we feel okay saying it. That wasn't good enough for them because it wasn't reflective of their current reality, so they didn't say it in their current reality. The nimtza, ki emunat hanhagat ha'achdut shel hayom ha'hu, אין בידה להתיר כלל את קביעות תואר האחדות בתפילה במצב של הנהגת היום הזה. And we find, based on the actions of Jeremiah and Daniel, who wouldn't use this language because it wasn't reflective of their reality, we find that using this language of God's oneness, which is only applicable on Hayom Hahu, on that day, we don't have permission to establish that language of oneness, to establish that descriptor in our prayer in this situation, when we're really still in the state of Hayom Hazeh, on this day. So all the Pachad Yitzchak is doing at this point is really problematizing. How could it be in Mincha, we've established the language of Etachad Veshimcha Achad, you are one and God's name is one. Isn't this a blatant sort of like direct contradiction or emotionally dishonest? Because we see in Elena, Elena says, it's not true. God is not one now. And so how are we saying that in Mincha? We should be like, totally bowled over by how we're saying this. Okay. I just want to say to like step out for a second. It may be that when you are davening, this is not the line that you're getting stuck on. Like perhaps you've never been like, how can I possibly say you are one, God's name is one. But it might be that there are other things for which this feels more relevant that you're like, how could I possibly be saying this? And so I want to say like to the extent that this line from Mincha is not your problem, but there are other parts of liturgy where you're feeling like this is where I'm actually feeling the disconnect. We can expand this, hopefully, to think about that as well. Okay, so now he has to fix the problem. He says, yet in truth, when it comes to the quality of achdut, of oneness, there was never a moment, even among the prophets, for the question of ayet borotav. Really, the prophets, even though they said, Ayeh Noratav, Ayeh Gorotav, where is God's mind and where is God's oneness? It was never really in question. Why was it in question? For the unity of the people of Israel, evident in the order of things on Bayom Hazeh, on this day, is the source for the full coming to light of God's unity in the order of things Bayom Hahu, on that day. Okay, what he's saying is, it was never really a question. God's oneness was never really a question because he's saying God's oneness depends on our oneness. When will God be one? When we are one. When we are one, when we are united, then God will be one. And he's saying in his time period in which he's living, he's making the claim that the oneness of the Jewish people, that's not in question. What's in question is God's oneness, but it's evident that the Jewish people are one. What's sort of incredible about reading this text in the moment in which we're living is the Jewish people don't feel like one at all. We feel actually quite divided from one another. So it's sort of incredible to read a text where he's saying what's called into question is God's oneness, but actually the unity of the Jewish people that he's taking for granted. So anyway, so assuming that, he says, and though with the qualities of might and awesomeness, we needed the ingenuity of the members of the Great Assembly to say that these are themselves as might. With the question of Gibor and Ora, we needed the members of the Great Assembly to say, no, it's not that God isn't Gibor, God isn't mighty. It's just not, you're not understanding the source that they needed to be creative, they needed to reinterpret. With the quality of unity, It is clear that the unity of the people of Israel, which is fully apparent, he's saying everyone can see that we are united, that we are one, is the paradigm for the fullness of divine unity in the future order of things on that day. What we know to be true is that the Jewish people are one. And so while we might not know if God is one, or we might not experience God as one, the fact that the Jewish people are one, that's going to be the thing that somehow allows God to be one on that day. Okay. And here we arrive at the source for the change in language in the liturgy of the Shabbat Mincha prayer. He's going to explain, this is why, whereas on Aleinu, we sort of speak the world as truth and say, God will be one in the future. This is why we feel comfortable for Shabbat Mincha saying that it's happening right now, that God is already one. The quality of God's unity and the unity of God's name is expressed in a simple statement, Atah Echad V'Shimcha Echad. While the praise of Israel's unity is expressed through a rhetorical question, Mi Ke'amcha Yisrael, who is like your people Israel? But this is precisely the point. Since the permissibility of saying Atah Echad V'Shimcha Echad, you are one and your name is one, is rooted in the unity of your people Israel, who is like your people Israel, which is already apparent in this day, the praise of God's unity comes by way of this, Mi Kemcha Yisrael, who is like your people Israel, this rhetorical question. The fact that we're saying, Mi is who is like your people Israel, is to say, your people Israel are one, right? Your people of Israel, when you ask a rhetorical question, you don't need an answer because the answer is so self-evident. Your people are one. And that allows us to point to something that is in the future and in hidden. God, we might not experience God's oneness, but this is a oneness we can experience. And that allows us to speak of God's oneness. For it is only because the praise of the unity of Israel is present and palpable that it becomes possible to fix in prayer a praise to the unity of God's name. Okay, so just to stay outside for a second. Oh, I like this, Paul. I'm probably going to come to your comment in a second. Just stay outside again what I think he's saying. He's saying it might be that we don't experience God as being one in this world. And so that feels like we can't with full heart say, Atah Echad V'Shimcha Echad, you are one and your name is one. But actually there is something, a kernel of truth in that, because what we know to be true, he is saying, is that the people of Israel are one. And this truth allows us to point to some other truth that might be hidden. So just to say in a different way, in a more expansive way, is to say, there may be things in prayer that you feel like, I don't know if I can say this with a full heart. And so the advice here is, but is there a part of this that you can sort of find your way into? Is there a kernel of something that you can ground yourself in, something that is palpable and true, that can then point to sort of the future thing or the thing that is hidden? I want to close by sharing a poem that I also learned from Akiva from that session that I really recommend you check out. This poem is by Avraham Chalfi, Israeli poet Avraham Chalfi. I have to say, I confess that I find it to be a very mysterious poem. I don't totally understand it. So perhaps you'll help me understand it, but there's something about it that I really love. So I want to bring it anyway, and perhaps we'll understand a bit of it together. He says, Adam tole et etmolo al vav takua beliba shel ruach. Hala, hala. A person hangs his yesterday on a peg set, like on a wooden thing that's been stuck in the wall, in the heart of a wind. Onward, onward. Shashu ek ilu, ilu, lu. Delights of as if only. Look, they all bowed. Fell at the feet of no likes has he whose rage and roar fill the world. Vigam ani nofel vikam, nofel vikam, nofel, uma amin be'emunash lema. And I also fall and rise, fall and rise, fall and believe with a full heart, or believe with a full faith. I'll just read it one more time, because for me, I need to hear poems a couple of times. The question that I'm going to ask you is just, what phrases or images stand out for you? A person hangs his yesterday on a peg set in the heart of the wind, onward, onward. Delights of as if only. Look, they all bowed, fell at the feet of no legs has he whose rage and roar fill the world. And I too fall and rise,
fall and believe with a full faith. Yeah, I'm curious to hear your thoughts in the chat. You don't have to have the poem all figured out, but what words are you curious about? What are you noticing? What's coming up for you? So Michael points out the raglaim, and the poem says, fell at the feet of no legs has he whose rage and roar fills the world. That this is a reference to the classic reference to idols, that God, our God, has no legs or eyes or ears. Larry says that as if reinforces the to make believe theme we had earlier, and having believed with a full faith in a slot where the word would have been rise is powerful. Oh, that's really cool. So two things Larry's saying there. One is, yes, I very much love, I think I in part bring this poem for the delights of as if only, that language, the ki'ilu, ilu, lu, that sense of like, what if we lived as if something was true, or prayer as an opportunity to try on a new perspective, to make believe, how would that shape our reality? But that, you know, prayer as an opportunity to live as if really resonates with me. And then also, Larry, yeah, I appreciate you pointing out, you would expect it to be kam nofel, vekam nofel. And then what is the kam? What is the rising? The ma'amin, the munashlema, believing with full faith. Thanks for pointing that out. Rina says, a bit of a leinu in there. Bob says, the wind is the dynamism of events. It causes us to fall down, and it also causes us to reinterpretation of our past, which hangs on the peg set, but the wind is also God. Therefore, I wonder if the dynamism of events is in fact the transcendent power of creation, is in fact God. So very deep thoughts there, Bob, and I'd love to get to hear more about it. I do see part of what you're saying, part of like what I'm drawn to about this poem is there's a sense of movement and a sense of fixedness of I'm trying to fix something. There's something that is constant. There's the peg set. But where am I hanging the peg set? In the wind. I'm like hanging this thing that is fixed. I'm trying to fix something into this thing that is by definition moving and ephemeral and intangible and hard to fix. Even the language of the ki'ilu, ilu, lu, as if there's a sense of like, there's something swinging back and forth, right? The kam ben nofel, it's like, I'm trying to fix myself. And there's this like rising up movement. And part of what I maybe see in there is, you know, prayer is an attempt to fix and set liturgy, but our emotional state and our relationship to God and the situation in which we are saying the prayers is constantly changing. Our world is an ever-changing world. And so it's like, the prayer is an attempt to hang something on a peg set that's been situated in the wind in this really fragile, volatile, tangible, you know, kind of way. Okay, so Shoshana points out, there's a Talmudic claim that God's tefillin says, my people of Israel is one. Love that. Thank you for bringing that in. Brandon points out the nofel vekam, rising, falling and rising, ending on nofel, and in the fall one believes fully. Michael said takua with echoes of takua, that it's takua in the wall, which sounds like tikia, the sound of the shofar, the blowing. Robert says, yesterday gets blown away and moves onward. So, more to say here with this poem, but I think, you know, what I want to leave us with, a few things. One is not that there's any right strategy all the time, but that when we are praying and to the extent that we are feeling like there is a tension or a certain amount of like dishonesty, that we don't feel that the words we are saying totally match up with our emotional state, that there might be different avenues available to us, that sometimes perhaps the correct approach is, as Rabbi Nachman suggests, is just to say the words, because our words have the power to shape reality. And maybe we want to live in this as if world. Or perhaps the approach is actually to, you know, follow Jeremiah and Daniel. And to the extent that you're feeling that tension, actually to give yourself permission to not say those things. We saw that in the first session with Rivka Lubich, that she was like, I actually can't say this psalm as written right now. I'm going to need to write my own interpretation to actually write out the things that I'm thinking. Or maybe another strategy is I can't fully, this doesn't fully feel true to me, but I'm going to find the thing that is true, the kernel of what's true, and I'm going to say that. In all of this, I feel like to me, there's something very powerful about just sort of naming that our faith, our relationship to God, our relationship to prayer, this is something that is dynamic, that is changing. It's a peg set hung in the wind. We rise and fall, but part of what we are doing is perhaps trying to lean into the as if, the world of as if, and hopefully get to this place of ma'amin be'emunah shlema, to believe with the full faith. So we're going to pause there. Thank you for all of your thoughts and your very active participation. In our last session, we'll be looking at intellectual honesty as it relates to halakha. So if you've ever sold your chametz, your leavened product on Pesach, or you've made use of an eruv, that magical string that hangs around the city and suddenly allows you to carry, we'll be looking at some of those things. You know, how do we relate to those kind of tricks with a sense of intellectual honesty? Okay, have a great day.